All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today is a Mailbag Monday where I will be answering your listener questions dealing with the Atlanta Falcons.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years at FalcFans.com, on Twitter at FalcFans, and, of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today is a Q&A episode. I know we wrapped up last week with a Q&A. We're going to begin this week with a Q&A. I got some great guests coming for you later this week, but, wasn't able to get that up for you today. So we'll fill the time by answering some questions. We'll talk a little bit about sort of the Falcons' running back situation and maybe their draft plans there at the cornerback position along the offensive line. And if we have the time, we'll get to a detailed breakdown of sort of the team's, what the team looks for at linebackers. And as usual, if I cannot get to a question on this episode, and probably the only one is that sort of detailed analysis of the linebacker position is the only one. But any questions I do not get to on today's episode, I will answer on a leftover mailbag on FalcFans.com. The way that you can submit your questions is via Facebook or Twitter. Locked On Falcons is the name of the page for both of those social media platforms. You can also send an email to lockedonfalcons@mail.com. Of course, you can leave a comment at falcfans.com where the podcast is posted daily. So without further ado, let's jump right into it. Our first question comes from Dominique at The Real Pat Man. He asks, if Patrick DeMarco is cut by the Bills, do you think the Falcons jump on him? I would hope so if he's cut by the Bills. It doesn't seem like that's in the cards anytime soon. It seems like the Bills are committed to our favorite former Falcon fullback for at least another year. But certainly we can probably revisit that topic again in 2020 after we see sort of what Ricky Ortiz and or Luke Stocker do this upcoming season. I don't think either of those guys are likely to sort of win my affections in the same way that number 42 did once upon a time. Our next question comes from Christian Farholt at C Farholt on Twitter. He asks his two questions. His first one, is Devontae Freeman gone if he can't stay healthy for 12 plus games and exceed 1,200 yards in total? And his second question is, what are the chances that Quinn drafts two edge rushers and finally moves Vic to Sam? That is the strong side linebacker. So the first question is, I think it's possible that Freeman could be gone after this season. I'm not going to necessarily stick to those exact numbers that you mentioned, Christian. I imagine they're just sort of ballpark for our expectations last year, or in 2017, his last full season. He had about 1,180 total yards from scrimmage, both receiving and rushing yards, in about 14 games. So I'm assuming that you're sort of ballparking that and assuming that because Tevin Coleman's gone, he's going to get a bigger piece of the puzzle, so he should be able to exceed 1,200 yards in 12 or more games that he did do in 2017. But stats aside, I do think it's true that Devontae does need to have a good season this year to return in 2020 because a roster spot then is not guaranteed. I think the thing that is working in his favor is that the way that his contract is structured, while the guaranteed portion of his contract runs out after this 2019 season, it doesn't mean that the Falcons can just basically decide to cut him next offseason without any issue. If he was to be cut next March, the Falcons would have to carry a dead money hit of $6 million, which is just too expensive, and it would only result in cap savings of $3.5 million. So they would have to really want to get rid of Devontae Freeman in order to basically take on that hit. More than likely, if the Falcons were to part ways with Devontae, it would be a post-June 1 cut, and then they would basically reverse that, and they would only have to carry about $3 million in terms of dead money in 2020, and they would save $6.5 million instead. So I think the Falcons, I think even if Freeman only has a quote-unquote decent year and fails to meet sort of those aforementioned benchmarks, I still think there's a decent chance that he'll be back in 2020. I think what you more likely to see if his season is only decent but isn't poor enough where like the team is just looking to move on outright, I think that only really happens if he does have another sort of really injury-plagued season and or he's just not very productive this year. But I think more than likely you'll probably the more likely thing is that if he has only a decent year, you'll see them sort of approach him to restructure his contract and lower his cap hit, because his cap hit in 2020 is going to be about $9.5 million. To answer your second question about the Falcons drafting two edges and moving Vic to Sam, I think the chances of them drafting two edges is pretty good to, you know, decent to pretty good. But you can never say anything for certain when it comes to the Falcons draft plans. I think right now, sort of, I'm expecting either their first or second round pick to be an edge rusher. Then I think that is going to be a guy that's going to be targeted to play in the nickel. Then I think you could see them sort of double dip later and draft an edge on day three at some point, and that guy's going to be more of a base defender. And I think a lot of it depends on sort of what their early round pick is going to be if it does happen to be an edge rusher. For example, if they take Brian Burns in the first round, then I think you're more likely to see a double dip. But if they were to snag Cleveland Farrell at pick 14 or Chase Winovich later on, then I think you would be less likely to see them do a double dip, just because I think Farrell and Winovich are probably better suited than Burns to sort of fill that double role as both a base and nickel contributor. As for moving Vic Beasley to Sam linebacker, I think that ship has sailed. I think the Falcons basically made their bed with Vic Beasley as far as him being, quote unquote, purely a pass rusher last offseason with the rhetoric that they said, and also sort of keeping him this season at that $13 million salary is basically them doubling down on that decision. You'll once again see him playing defensive end in a nickel. And then my expectation is that he'll walk next offseason, you know, barring some weird circumstances. Even if he has a good year, I think he's likely to walk. If he has a bad year, I think he's likely to walk. So I think more than likely, that's one of the reasons why I sort of expect the team to potentially target an edge in the first round of the draft, and basically have a ready-made replacement for Vic Beasley come 2020, similar to what we saw a couple of years ago when the Falcons drafted Tack McKinley, knowing that there was a good chance that Adrian Claiborne was going to walk after that season. So we got more to come on today's episode, but I do want to let you guys know that Major League Baseball is back, and you can find a growing list of daily podcasts on the MLB side of the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Braves podcast hosted by Dylan Short. Find that on whatever podcast platform you prefer, including the new Himalaya app, your team every day. So our next question comes from ClemDB at ClemFrico on Twitter. Why is everyone talking about running back in round 4 or 5? Brian Hill did not prove much, but we don't expect much from our RB3. A DL project, O-line or D-line would be way more useful, don't you think? I imagine that the onus behind talking about the Falcons drafting a running back stems from a couple of places. Probably the first one is people's desire to replace Tevin Coleman, which I imagine stems often from not believing in Ito Smith being good enough to replace Tevin Coleman, which probably stems from, you know, or at least overlaps with the same people that thought Tevin Coleman was the best running back on the Falcons roster. I think the other reason why people are keen to draft a running back is due to sort of what we just talked about with Devontae Freeman, just not having a lot of faith and confidence in Freeman's ability to hold up, or you know, being the type of person that was not necessarily thrilled with the Falcons paying him, or being the type of person that thought Tevin Coleman was the better running back. Again, a lot of overlap here. And so I think, you know, a lot of it's sort of, if you were on Team Tevin, basically, then you're probably wanting the Falcons to draft a running back. And I think if you weren't necessarily, you know, hashtag Team Tevin, then you probably are sort of thinking more in the same line as myself or you, Clem, which is you're not necessarily that overly concerned with the running back position right now. Personally, I'm fine with Ito replacing Tevin Coleman. That's what we drafted him for, and we'll see what he can do. And I expect him to show significant improvement in year two, as most running backs do. We saw this with Tevin Coleman, who did absolutely nothing his rookie season and then, you know, became this monster in year two. And, you know, I'm also not necessarily overly concerned with Freeman's durability. And a lot of that is not necessarily because I'm, like, super confident that he's going to stay healthy. I just, it doesn't really make that much of a difference to me, just because I kind of am, you know, the whole Dan Quinn hashtag physical movement that the Falcons are doing is like, whatever. Like, you know, if I'm not necessarily against balance. I'm not against running the football. I think those things are very valuable in this league. But I think at the end of the day, you know, when you have a top five quarterback and potentially one of the top, not the best, but one of the top two or three wide receiver duos in the league, you know, your bread is not going to necessarily be buttered running the football. And that's not going to necessarily make or break your offense, really, in my eyes. So I applaud the team for, you know, being physical and making obvious benefits. But at the same time, I kind of also believe that the issues that the Falcons had in the running game in 2018 weren't necessarily due to their not having good enough running backs. I think it had more to do with their offensive line and blocking issues. And my hope is that with the additions that they've already made at guard and tight end, as well as what I'm hoping they will continue to make in the draft at offensive tackle and maybe possibly center, that they will be able to make enough strides there that should Ito Smith and Brian Hill be forced into the lineup in the light of another Devontae Freeman injury or subpar play or whatever, that the Falcons will be fine. Again, I'm not going to expect Ito and Brian Hill to remind anybody of, you know, the Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram duo anytime soon, or even Freeman or Coleman at their height of their careers. But, you know, I think they can certainly be more than functional behind a capable offensive line if that's what the Falcons wind up having, to not be sort of this one-dimensional offense. So that's part of the reason why I'm not overly concerned about the running back position. So I would agree with you, Clem, that I don't necessarily feel like drafting a running back that is basically Devontae Freeman injury insurance, or due to the fact that using another fourth or fifth round pick on a running back after you've already used fourth and fifth round picks on running backs is going to suddenly just, oh, this is going to, you know, third time's a charm and it's going to work out this time and you're going to hit a home run with this pick. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I'd much rather, like, you spend that on other areas, not only on the trenches, but also at some other skill positions like cornerback and wide receiver and possibly linebacker that I feel like are more pressing concerns for the team right now. All right. We got a question from KB1 at First Flight Eli on Twitter. He has two questions, similar. First one is, what do you think the chances are the Falcons drafted Jonah Williams / Cody Ford at 14, then drafting Chris Lindstrom in the second? And the second question is, would a corner like Rock Ya-Sin be on the team's radar this year, or would they look for more of a developmental corner later in the draft? To answer your first question, I do think the chances of them drafting a player like Williams or Ford at 14 is pretty high, but I think coming back in round two and taking Lindstrom specifically, I think is unlikely. I think they could look at an interior offensive lineman on the second day of the draft in that second round, but I think it's more likely to be a guy that has experience playing center. I think with the additions of Carpenter and Brown going along with the presences of Wes Schweitzer and Brandon Fusco and even Sean Harlow to a lesser extent, that the Falcons are pretty good at the guard position. What they really lack is a backup center, someone that in the event of an Alex Mack injury can play center and play it well. That was Ben Garland. I don't know who that guy is currently on the roster, and that's partially the blame or the cause of the team signing Adam Geddes, who has some experience at center, but he's going to compete with the likes of presumably Schweitzer and Fusco. But Schweitzer and Harlow have barely played center. Geddes has not really played an NFL game at center. He's just only played a couple of preseason games there. And Fusco hasn't really played center since, you know, his college days, which was like 8 or 9 years ago. So there's a question mark. Like, so if the Falcons do go after an interior player, I think it's a guy that's going to have center experience. It's primarily his job is going to be a center rather than a true guard like Lindstrom, who was exclusively a guard and tackle during his days at Boston College. So I think someone like an Eric McCoy from Texas A&M or Elton Jenkins from Mississippi State seem more plausible options in that round two range. Although from all the things I'm hearing, I think there's a decent chance that McCoy might wind up being taken in the first top 20 or 25 picks. So he's not going to be available at pick 45. And it does seem like, at least according to some prognostications, Jenkins may be more of a late second round, early third round type of guy. So maybe he would be more likely to be targeted at the top of the third round with their 79th overall pick than the 45th overall pick in the second round. So we'll have to see how that plays out. To answer your second question about the cornerback position, I'll be completely honest with you. I have no idea what the Falcons are going to do at cornerback. I have no idea. And it's going to be interesting over the next couple of weeks. I don't even know if we're going to spend a lot of time talking about it, even though it might be a priority on this podcast, because, like, I just have no idea how to attack it because I have no earthly clue how the Falcons are going to attack it. So I think someone like a Rocky Sin makes sense. And I was playing around with the Draft Network's mock draft simulator over the weekend. And I one scenario I had after I think Brian after I had taken Brian Burns in the first round, I think I had them taking Rocky Sin in round two. You know, at this point in time, I'm kind of thinking along a similar line as the edge rusher, or even more so, that they could definitely double dip at the cornerback position, and just simply because they have even less depth at that position right now. Although I'm sure other people will argue that they have less depth at the edge rusher position because people have questions about Vic Beasley. But for now, looking at the cornerback position, I'm sort of expecting that double dip to be them taking both an outside and an inside guy, a nickel guy, to bolster their depth. I have no idea which one they're going to prioritize. I think, you know, given generally speaking that the premium is on the bigger, longer outside corners that the Falcons tend to like, that you could see, you know, a guy like Rocky Sin, and particularly guys that could hold up in man coverage, given how much man the Falcons play, you know, that makes more sense to prioritize that over the inside guy. But then at the same time, I think you can make the argument that there are more questions surrounding whether DeMonte Casey can hold up as a full-time nickel cornerback than there are whether Oliver and Trufant can hold up on the outside. And so it may behoove you to get the better player at the nickel just in case that guy's going to have to play early. So it does also make sense to prioritize that. So for the time being, I'm sort of looking at it more than likely. I'm you know, my own bias is just get the outside guy. But we'll have to sort of see. I expect the Falcons to target a cornerback at some point between rounds two and four. And I think they could easily come back later on day three of the draft, assuming that they have those later round picks, and get another guy. So, you know, ideally you could get a guy that can do both, that can play both outside and inside. But, you know, those types of guys tend to get drafted a little bit higher. So I don't know if Rocky Sin specifically is that type of guy. He didn't strike that to me. To me, he's more of a purely outside guy. He reminded me a little bit of Robert Alford, but not as smooth a version of Robert Alford, but a little bit more physical than Robert Alford. So we'll have to see. We got more questions to answer, including sort of breaking down the linebacker position for this Falcons team. But before we get there, I do want to let you guys know that you can check out the Locked On NFL podcast hosted by Matt Williamson every day. Matt brings you all the action and reactions from around the league, having great guests every day of the show. Check that out wherever you get your Locked On podcasts, your team every day. So Andy, Falcons Andy asks, what do you think the most important traits and skills are at each linebacker position in Dan Quinn's scheme? Well, you know, to understand that, you got to understand the scheme. So let's talk about what the scheme is. And the Falcons play a 4-3 under defense, deploys a lot of cover three zone, a lot of cover one man zone. I mean, not cover one man zone. I just said a whole bunch of words. Cover one man coverage. We're going to talk a little bit about what those things mean, but I would recommend you guys, I know probably most of you listening to this in the car, but whenever you get an opportunity, not while you're driving, but, you know, go on your phone, go on your computer or whatever. And, you know, Google 4-3 under defense, Google the Seahawks defense, Google the cover three. And there was a lot of articles written about this in 2013 and 2014, back at the heyday of the Seahawks. And, you know, you can come back and listen to this episode. I don't mind another download, but, and listen to what I'm talking about while you can sort of better visualize it by looking at some images out there. So that you can better visualize what I'm talking about. But basically in a cover three zone, you know, the two outside linebackers, the Sam and Will that we will refer to them from here on out, are basically tasked with covering the flats in the zone coverage. So anything outside the hash marks, basically between the line of scrimmage and the first 5 to 10 yards downfield, is their responsibility. For the middle linebacker or the Mike, they basically cover the middle zone in the middle of the field. And they will often get additional support over the middle by the strong safety, in this case, Keanu Neal, in the Seahawks case, Cam Chancellor. Because the cover three utilizes three defenders covering the deep part of the field and splits the field into thirds, with the two outside corners and a single high free safety, that leaves only four defenders underneath in the short and intermediate areas to cover the middle of the field. And when you compare that to the cover two zone scheme, which has two deep safeties that cover, you know, the deep half of the field, but now has five underneath defenders, because you have one less underneath defender, it can somewhat be a disadvantage at times, which is partially to blame why the Falcons tend to give up a lot of catches and production to running backs in the passing game. And so you're basically, you know, the cover three is basically meant to try to maximize prevention of the deep play and funnel things underneath. But with one less defender there, you can be a little bit more susceptible to sort of the dink and dunking, particularly if guys aren't making tackles in the open field. And so the way that you try to balance that is by having fast, rangy linebackers that can cover a lot of ground and obviously make open field tackles. And basically you need four guys that are fast enough to do the job of five. And because the middle linebacker is covering the middle of the field as opposed to the flats, like the outside linebackers are, he needs to be a little bit more instinctual than the outside guys are, because he's going to get hit with a lot more route combinations over the middle of the field. So it's going to put a little bit more mental strain on his abilities to cover that middle field. In the cover one man, it's, you know, it's man coverage. The Falcons typically deploy that on third downs on sort of those intermediate distances, third and four, third and seven, those types of things. And basically everybody who's not rushing the quarterback or the free safety is locked up in man coverage. But because teams deploy five receivers for the most part, that leaves one free defender to often spy the quarterback, which is often the middle linebacker in Deion Jones's case. Or you could use that extra defender to basically bring a five-man pressure, which the Falcons usually use Devondre Campbell for at that Sam linebacker skill. So at the Sam, pass rushing skills is a plus. But again, in that cover one man scheme, typically the linebacker is going to be matched up predominantly against running backs and tight ends. And generally speaking, you know, the good thing is that when you have fast guys that cover a lot of ground in zone coverage, typically there's a lot of overlap between the guys that are fast enough and athletic enough and quick enough to cover running backs and tight ends. The Falcons generally use Keanu Neal as their tight end cover guy, but there are certain matchups where they'll put more of linebackers on him. And so if you're going to be typically the same linebacker, is often going to draw that assignment more often than not, but the middle linebacker and the weak side linebacker will also draw that assignment on occasion. But typically you want that whoever's going to be the tight end eraser, which is most often the Sam guy, he's going to need to be a little bit longer and have a little bit more size and athleticism to handle tight ends. You know, as far as defending against the run, it's really about gap control. And for those of you guys that don't know about gaps, there's the A gap, which is the gap between the center and the guard on either side of the center. Then there's the B gap, which is between the guard and the tackle. The C gap, which is between the tackle and the tight end. And of course, the D gap, as you can guess, is outside the tight end. And, you know, we'll just use the simple sort of ways that you would draw it up on a whiteboard. But again, obviously, football is a little bit more complicated than this. Otherwise, guys wouldn't get be paid millions of dollars to draw up these schemes and come up with these schemes and defend these schemes. But typically, the Sam is going to line up on the line of scrimmage, basically outside the strong side defensive end. And he'll usually man the C or D gap, depending on who's the outside defender. And his job is to basically set the edge against the run. And whether it's the tight end or the offensive tackle, that he's going to attack that outside blocker that he's lined up against and basically be asked to prevent the running back from getting to the outside. His job is to basically funnel the run back to the inside. And if the running back does go outside, then he should be in a position to make a tackle. So, you know, that's basically what he's going to do every play. So you're going to need guys that are bigger, stronger, more aggressive. They're going to be a little bit longer, again, because they're going to be dealing with offensive tackles and tight ends all the time. Being able to get that extension to get that leverage against the run is going to be valuable. Guys that have experience rushing the quarterback are basically guys that have experience dealing with offensive tackles on a regular basis, tend to be a little bit bigger, longer guys. So, you know, they tend to be less afraid to shy away from that, you know, 320-pound offensive tackle at contact. And so similarly, you know, it's basically you're looking for kind of an undersized defensive end. And so that has coverage ability, which is basically the classic 3-4 outside linebacker is really ideal as a Sam linebacker. But the difference is that in a 3-4 scheme, a lot of the time, if not the vast majority of the time, if not every single time, 3-4 outside linebacker is going to be rushing the quarterback on passing downs, while in this scheme, he's going to be more often than not dropping in the coverage. So coverage skills is going to be maximized more so than, you know, basically find a 3-4 outside linebacker that's not good at rushing the quarterback. Well, I wonder where we could find somebody like that. Anyway, for the inside guys, the Mike and the Will, they're pretty interchangeable as far as their run responsibilities. Both guys are going to be lining up in the middle. Typically, you know, the middle linebacker is going to be covering the B gap between the strong side defensive end and nose tackle. The weak side linebacker is going to be covering the A gap between the nose tackle and the three technique. So, you know, the difference between the two positions aren't necessarily stark. You're looking for the Mike and the Will to basically react what's going on in the backfield, and then, you know, do the thing that they need to do at that point in time. And whether that's, you know, making the play is, you know, going pursuing sideline to sideline because it's an outside run, whether it's shooting a gap up the middle to make a play in the backfield, whether it's taking on a pulling guard or a, you know, an offensive lineman climbing to the second level, beating a fullback in the hole, or whatever the case may be. You know, you need to have a little bit of sort of all those skills, not only sideline to sideline pursuit, but again, that's taken care of due to the skills that were acquired in coverage. You need that range and that speed to play sideline to sideline, but at the same time, you need to have a little bit of downhill ability, be able to attack a block, be able to shoot a gap, and also have the ability to bring down and tackle a ball carry in the hole. So I think, you know, because this is a league where, you know, almost 60% of the plays are passes, and you're going to play a lot of nickel 65 to 70% of the time, I think, you know, coverage abilities, that speed, that range is prioritized in the scheme, rightfully so. But I do think you need to have a little bit of that downhill oomph. And I think it's more of a mentality than it necessarily needs to be sort of purely physical. Like, you just got to be willing to mix it up with the 300-pound dude, you know, and not every 230-pound linebacker is built that way. Some are, some aren't. You know, Levante David's built that way. I would question whether Deion Jones is built that way. And I think without getting too much into sort of the limitations of our linebackers, you know, I think Deion Jones, from a reading recognition standpoint, obviously I think our linebackers are great in coverage. There's no question about that. They take care of business on that end. It's the run defending that's always been the issue. I think Deion Jones does a good job as far as the reading recognition. I think the tackling, while it was an issue early in his career, has become less of an issue over the last couple of seasons. So that's not really necessarily a concern for me. It's really just sort of that willingness to take on guys in the hole when he needs to. I don't think that's really what he's about. And I think that leads to some issues that the team has. I think with Devondre Campbell, the frustrating thing about Devondre Campbell with the move to Sam linebacker is it's a much more simplified role, because you don't have to do these sort of complex reading and recognition. You just set the edge. That's what you do. Just keep setting the edge. It's pretty simple. You know, and so it, one of the reasons why I was excited about him moving to the Sam linebacker is because he had questionable, the reading and recognition start was the thing that he had the most trouble with in college and as a rookie. And so seemingly this would simplify it. But I think the problem he has is he's playing the Sam linebacker like he plays the Will linebacker, which is he's looking in the backfield to try to see what's going on in the backfield. And it prevents him from setting the edge on a consistent basis. And it creates problems. And then, you know, the same issues when he plays the Will linebacker spot, because he's a little step behind sort of recognizing things in the backfield, it can sort of lead to sort of, you know, offensive linemen getting control of their gap. And in college, that wasn't a big issue because, you know, dealing with offensive guards from Illinois, you know, he can just basically beat that guy. But when you're dealing with, you know, Trey Turner or Jari Evans, that's going to be a little bit more problematic. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's really the issues that the Falcons have to deal with, and we've been dealing with that for a number of years. And, you know, I think it's fair to question how much that's going to improve. Deion Jones, I think, has made serious progress. Campbell, not so much. And we'll have to sort of see how the Falcons deal with that. But I think, you know, in terms of sort of what's the most important traits, you know, I think there's one of the reasons why I was not happy about the Jones pick was because I believed that there was a certain level of physicality that is required in the league playing linebacker. And I questioned whether Deion Jones had it. Obviously, I just raised the question still. It's gotten better. It hasn't been as problematic as I expected it to be, which is part of the reason why I was very down on the team going in 2016. But I do think it is a concern. And I think for the Falcons moving forward if they're going to continue to address their linebacker position, which I think they will. Obviously, they're going to prioritize athleticism as they have done, but they do need to get guys that maybe are a little bit better at the instinctual part of the game from the neck up, and guys that have a little bit more of that oomph to their game and are willing to play that more physical style of downhill to offset some of the issues, particularly Jones, who we expect to be a Falcon for a very long time, doesn't necessarily bring to the table as consistently as you would hope. But finding those types of guys that have check both boxes are hard to find. That's why the Luke Kuechlys and the Bobby Wagners don't grow on trees. So it'll be interesting to sort of see how the Falcons deal with this moving forward. I do think at some point, whether it's this year or next year, linebacker is going to be a priority for this team. If they can find a good linebacker this year, I think they can sort of offset that issue to a certain extent. But we'll have to see how things go. So there you have it, guys. I hope that answers your question, Andy. Yeah, we'll be back probably tomorrow with a guest to talk Falcons draft strategies. I'm sure we'll be talking a lot more about trading up and which players are worthy of the Falcons' attention and all that type of stuff, and continue to talk more draft in the coming weeks as we move forward. So if you have additional questions that you have, you can still send those in whenever you feel like it, whenever they come to you. Again, you can do so on Twitter at Locked On Falcons. You can do so on Facebook, Locked On Falcons as well. You can do the email address, lockedonfalcons@mail.com, or you can leave a comment at falcons.com where the podcast is posted daily. Until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.